independent thoughts, independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. I will get to the Whoopi apology from yesterday that I find hilarious still today. I find it that hilarious. Like, that's genuine laughter. But let's do some other stuff first. Let's talk about the White House press secretary, Corinne Jean-Pierre. It's a rough go of things for her, I think. I don't think that she's, like, suited for this job. I'm going to say, I'm not trying to be mean. Anyone that hears that, like, oh, he hates her for some reason, something that has nothing to do with her job performance, and that's not true. I just don't think she's great at the gig. There was a viral video, I won't play the audio of it, earlier this week and last week, I think even, of her saying over 100 times that she had no answer to a question. I'll get back to you on that. I got nothing on that right now. Because that's her go-to. This is why I think this job's not for her. You've got to be a master of spin. If your soul can take over it all and tell you, hey, don't lie at this moment about this thing. And it doesn't happen all the time. She's definitely slinging lies up there. But if sometimes your soul can be like, hey, you got it. You got to just avoid this question altogether. And you do it as many times as she does. It means you're not doing the thing that the administration wants, which is to spin the bad. The other thing that's true is that maybe she could have been good at this job if she didn't work for this administration where you've got to spin everything. The fact that they won't even admit that this is a recession is single-handedly, to me, the most hilarious thing yet in a sort of dark kind of humor, I guess. But the most hilarious thing yet in just a line of we're not going to admit we're doing something wrong. Inflation, transitory, it's going to go away. And now a recession defined totally different means other stuff than whatever you think it means. But here's Corinne first answering questions about if they're going to regret some of the things they're saying, and maybe even if the American people should have wised up by now and not listened to things like Biden, people like Biden, when they say that we're not in a recession. And she doesn't have a valuable answer to have you burned us too many times now.
Today, the president argued that the economy is not in a recession.
By the way, he did do that so he can spend trillions of additional dollars.
And it was a year ago that the president said that inflation would be temporary. So the question is, why should Americans take his word for it now when the president got it wrong on the economy a year ago?
You know what I wish I could play, actually? Like a no-nonsense version of the question. Maybe asked by somebody as if they're like an ex-relationship. You know, like if an ex of yours asked you why you broke up, and it was as salty as it could possibly be. Like, have all the mistakes that you made in the relationship been the reason that we didn't work out? Like, that sort of thing, as far as this goes. I wish someone would lob a question to Corinne Jean-Pierre and list all of the failures that the Biden administration has already incurred, and we still have more Biden time left for more failures, and then say, so why should we give you any faith at all?
So, here's, Well, when we talk about recession and we talk about where we are currently today,
we're
what
just gonna
we
lie.
Look at and is what we speak to
none
is,
of the stuff you guys
the facts
do
is what yeah. other experts are saying and what the textbook definition.
We listen to the one dentist that doesn't prescribe any of the Trident that all the other four dentists say is great for you. We're talking to that guy. That's what it sounds like all the time is what they're doing. We don't care about all the information. Even Bill Clinton, there's audio of Bill Clinton. I can't even believe I'm saying this guy's name today out there saying that a recession is two quarters of negative growth. That's audio we have and we'll play later. And it's old. It's from 2000. But even he is like, yeah, no, I know what recession is. Corinne Jean-Pierre asked other questions about this, continues to say that it's not even their fault that they're overly trying to define and change the rules on what a recession is. It's your fault for asking the question, you dummies.
Well, the president runs the risk of looking out of touch in this moment by digging in on this definition that this moment is not a recession.
By the way, I will pause again there, and I did like to include that question because the answer simply is yes. But the question is asked in such a softball way. This is the lobbing it up and praying that someone hits it the direction you want version of media that we see a lot. This is the biased media saying, is there a chance that since most of us think we're in a recession and the American people can feel the pain in their pocket and everyone but you guys seems to be capable of admitting this thing, is there a chance that this is a bad strategy? Yes or no?
Recession. if, in fact, at some point, it's determined that that's exactly what
You know, I have to tell you, Kristen, I don't think we're digging in. We're being asked. You know, we're being told, and, you know, every day I've come in here, I've been asked so crazy.
You guys ask me.
What, you know, is this a recession? So we're answering the question.
We're just answering questions, guys. We're not trying to talk about this because we're not in a recession, according to us and no one else. But it's your fault because you're the ones who keep bringing it up. The truth is that it's that amazing moment when again and again, and I think this is why the press starts to do this a lot. This is the one thing I still like about our media when they get things right. Is when they notice a lie, when they notice a weird one, a weakness that doesn't make a lot of sense, they do pounce on it. They do ask several more questions about that one thing. So Corinne is right when she says she's dealing with these questions on a daily basis, but it's because you guys continue to not admit that it's a recession and that's insanity that this keeps coming up. I will move on to other stuff she talked about. President Biden was asked about his 2.5-hour phone call with President Xi Jinping. 2.5 hours. They were on the phone. They talked about Taiwan at one point, based on some of the reports and information out there. Both individuals seemed to say something that made me worry that there could be a conflict. China didn't seem to back down or be worried at all. And certainly they'd probably point to what's going on in Ukraine with Russia as far as a reason why they'd assume America would be a paper tiger, which is terrible. I hate the idea that the amount of influence we have on a world scale has been diminished by the person in power and his inability to do anything other than wag his finger and say, don't do stuff. Even our border. And I have stuff to talk about there and some of the complaints coming out of Washington, D.C. About the amount of migrants being sent there from Texas, which is just something else. But here on this conversation on Biden and Xi Jinping, one of the things that didn't come up and one of the things that press did ask about, COVID, the origins of COVID. How are you not talking about with the president of China the origins of COVID since there's still confusion there? How is this not a conversation? The answer, we didn't really talk about that.
On the phone today, did President Biden ask President Xi anything about getting to the bottom of the origins of COVID?
On the origins of COVID.
She's flipping through papers. You would think you'd know this one, by the way. So again, I'm not trying to be overly critical. These are the moments where you're thinking maybe this job's not for her.
The two presidents did discuss the health security and transparency is key part of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the origins.
We have repeatedly said, the PRC is not living up to scientific
health norms
for data and information sharing. Said this before.
That's not the question we asked at all. Did they ask about the origins of COVID?
I know it's come up before, but it came up today.
I'm just saying that the two presidents did discuss health security. That did come up.
Okay. Did the president ask Xi about the findings of that congressional investigation that the Chinese were trying to infiltrate the Federal Reserve over the last couple of years?
We don't have anything to share on that.
Okay.
The answer's nah. We didn't ask about that either. Great 2.5 hours of your time, Mr. President. Way to use them effectively, productively. A way to get a lot of things done that I'm sure really, really helped get us further along in any of the challenges we face specific to China. One last thing. I do want to play this. This is about the D.C. stuff. The White House's preference, they were asked about it. Is it for illegal immigrants to get across the border because this administration is unwilling to do anything remotely effective in trying to deal with a problem that is the worst it's ever been and only getting worse all the time? Is there any chance that they're going to do something here about that? The answer is no. And so does that mean that they want these individuals that are coming across the border to stay in small towns and not be in places like Washington, D.C.?
So the White House's preference would be for small towns in Texas and Arizona to have to take care of these migrants rather than a large metropolitan
city
like Washington, D.C.
That is not what I said. They're sending migrants to big cities.
I'm sorry. I like it. Nah, I didn't say that. You said. I didn't say. We don't believe that. We just think, like the mayor of D.C. thinks, that too many illegal immigrants being sent to a major metropolitan area is bad and we need the National Guard to protect us. But we didn't say they have to stay in Texas. They just can't send them anywhere else.
cities on purpose, so using them as a political ploy.
So if they don't go to big cities, where should they
go? There's a process. I just laid it out.
There's a process. And they come to a big city, and now the mayor says she's the National Guard.
That's because Republicans are using, they're using migrants who are coming here for, who knows, because they're dealing with humanitarian issues back in their country.
They're coming here illegally. And look, I know that a lot of compassion comes in for people who think about the story, say, this is the thing. If you picture the person who crossed the border illegally to be a mom with two kids who couldn't find a way to feed her children, that wanted to figure out a better life for herself, and for some reason didn't want to try to claim asylum or go through any legal process, but just came here illegally. There are a lot of human beings that have, on a human level, some compassion to that version of a story. And that's the version she's leaning on when she talks about it there. But that has nothing to do with the question, by the way. And I'm not telling you to feel a certain way about what is illegal. I mean, it's very simply stated that illegal immigration is something we shouldn't allow in our country. If you want to expand immigration through a legal process, that's a different conversation. Just saying, go ahead, everybody come on in, we're not going to stop you, is a terrible policy for any country for any reason. But beyond all that, when they're talking about this, the actual question is, why are you upset that immigrants are now coming to places like Washington, D.C.? Why are you talking about it as a political ploy when the places that had been keeping these individuals because they weren't getting on a bus and going somewhere else, say that they're struggling, say that they're beyond any sort of capacity to deal with any of this problem, especially because of how bad it's gotten. Why is that an issue? This isn't about whether or not the person who got into our country needs to be sent back out of our country. This is actually Texas doing something very different and just sending them to the states, to the cities, to the places where politicians are saying it's a humanitarian crisis. It's a thing to do where mercy is involved, where kindness is a part of the equation, which is all political posturing. But the reason they're doing all of that is because they're not actually dealing with the problem. That's at least Governor Abbott's opinion, and it seems to be proven out when you do something like this. When you send people on buses to Chicago or to Washington, D.C., and they ask for the National Guard, they finally realize there's a problem. Because even our president right now, who wags his finger, as I said, and then does very little else, wants to deny as much as possible that there's actually a problem, and that problem is multifaceted, and that people in these towns, in these communities, who might also have a lot of the same compassion that some on the Democratic side of the aisle would have, are saying they simply can't function. When you're not hearing that message, the only way to get it across is to provide the experience to you as well. A quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show. But Chad works even when he has days off. Here he is with a message on Eden Pure.
Eden Pure, EdenPureDeals.com. Go there. Save big. You can. I'm telling you guys right now, you're going to save big on the best air purifiers around. And I'm talking little purifiers, right? Use code CHAD3. You're going to save huge. You're going to get three of these things. And they're small. Plug them in your wall. Don't hear it. Now that's quiet. Shh. Sounds like this. And the smell, the Oxyleaf 2 Thunderstorm, it kills the smells. And what else does it do? It smells a little bit like a thunderstorm. Oh, 250,000 plus already sold. No filters to buy over and over again. Silent, amazing, no floor space taken up, and it destroys odors. Right now, save $200 on Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-Pack. Get the whole home coverage for your kitchen, office, bedroom, or anywhere you want to get rid of odors. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Put in discount code CHAD3 to save $200, free shipping as well. EdenPureDeals.com, code CHAD3. EdenPureDeals.com, code CHAD3.
No need to socially distance while listening to your Chad Benson Show podcast. 4 out of 5 experts say so.
I'm a scientist. There is no corona.
But hurry before they change their mind. You know they will. Chad's podcast found on iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, and wherever you find your favorite COVID-free podcasts.
Oh my gosh. I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Chad is back after the weekend. I love the fact that there's so many self-help pieces out right now about if you win the Mega Millions. If you Google it right now, what do I do if I win $1.02 billion? The amount of organizations right now telling you how to keep it safe, how to do the smart things after winning the money is amazing. There must be such a huge appetite right now for people like looking for their local news organization. I feel like, by the way, this type of advice is similar to when news tells you to put on gloves and coats when it's cold outside. The things they're telling you to do if you win $1 billion on a piece of paper are pretty obvious standard things to do. You should probably make copies of it is one of the things out there. Then store the original somewhere safe. They say something like a safety deposit box. I like that I'm now doing the tips, even though I'm making fun of them, is the best place to put it. And then other stuff they say, lawyer up. Get a team, get financial advisors, protect your privacy as best you can. Do all those things. Do I have Mega Millions tickets? Of course I do. It's $1.02 billion that's on the line. I threw in a few dollars toward it. Do I think I'm going to win? Of course I do not. It's, what is it, like a 340 million to one odds of you actually winning the entire thing. But it's good that so many places in news have decided to move away from maybe fake news or something else for a week and just tell you what to do in case you win an obscene amount of money. I do have one other tip, and this is Craig, not Chad, so don't blame him for it. Do something ridiculous. It doesn't have to be insanely expensive. Don't buy an island or a jet, but just do something nutty and quirky and awkward with a certain amount of the money. For me, I would buy all the things necessary to actually be Batman. And I feel like that is going to cost a lot of money. But the Batmobile, the utility belt, the costume, all this stuff, I wouldn't be Batman anywhere. I wouldn't save any lives or fight any crime. I just have it as something I was capable of doing. And I'd be that billionaire, eccentric billionaire now, who mostly is saving his money, but also has basically a bat cave now under his home. So I encourage you to do that. I'm sure the financial experts won't love it. I'm sure most people out there with tips on this sort of thing will tell you definitely don't do that. But you never know. The resale value of a home with a legitimate bat cave in it, I haven't seen many out there on the market. It could be great. And I know the housing market is tough right now. Craig Collins filling in. More Chad Benson Show coming up in a bit.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent thoughts, independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Whoopi Goldberg doesn't know how to say sorry. We already knew this. We already understood this back when she said that Nazis weren't acting in a racist way. That was an insane thing. When she talked about the Holocaust and said that there wasn't a racial component to it, and everyone, even on The View, the people, and this was a while ago, I'm sure people remember this, even on The View, people were like, well, no, that's not. You're very wrong, Whoopi. And then she doubled down. I don't know if you remember, but on Colbert, she did an interview. She kind of said sorry. They came back from a break. And then she kind of reiterated her position that was very, very wrong. It's happening all over again. Now it's between her and Turning Point USA. She described a group of protesters as if they were invited guests to an event put on by Turning Point USA. And she essentially compared Turning Point itself to neo-Nazis. That was wrong. That was something that she got wrong, so much so, and with Turning Point threatening a lawsuit and seeming fairly, like, honest in their desire to potentially sue Whoopi Goldberg and The View, that earlier this week, not yesterday, but earlier this week, members of that show apologized for Whoopi, said that they had to make clarifications, they had to correct things that were said earlier, and Whoopi didn't do it. Yesterday, she finally did it herself. I feel like this has all been things that the legal team has probably been pushing her to do. And to be honest, just before I even share this audio, I have been connected at times to people who were noteworthy and dealing with stuff, nothing like this, nothing even close to this, and not really wanting to do the thing that, say, management or legal or someone else wants them to do to make it go away. So I've heard the back and forth. I've heard the resistance, and I just imagine that it exists very strongly here because one thing, as I said, to start this segment that Whoopi is bad at is apologizing. So this apology is trash, but I imagine it took a tremendous amount of convincing for us to even get here.
Welcome back. You know, in Monday's conversation about Turning Point USA, I put the young people at the conference in the same category as the protesters outside. And I don't like it when people make assumptions about me. And it's not any better when I make assumptions about other people, which I did. So my bad. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So
that's my bad. I'm sorry. Let's move on now. Let's talk about other stuff. It is so easy in today's society now, especially for media personalities, more so than I think just everyday people, to assume the absolute worst in the political side you're not on. The absolute worst. Any version of what is tremendously untrue, even day to day for 99.9% of people, or maybe even a full 100% of people, including the politicians themselves, who lob these accusations at each other. Someone calls someone else a Nazi or this or that. And it's just crazy the way that that works. But this trickles down, as I said, at least into these media places where people like Whoopi Goldberg, people like Joy Behar will say outlandish, ridiculous things. Say things like, I can't understand how anyone could ever be a Republican now. It's the party of hate. They're evil people and we're the good guys. They'll say that stuff and then they'll get in trouble when one time one company is willing to go ahead and force them to acknowledge this would not happen if Turning Point USA wasn't actually threatening and or potentially creating that legal risk, that legal opportunity to go sue them. They would not be taking back their words. They wouldn't care. That's the thing. They would walk away from the show that day and someone would say, hey, Whoopi, you know what you said was a lie? And she's like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. And then they blame. This is why it matters to me, though, by the way. This is the thing that infuriates me the most. The people on the left, especially in media, but certainly the politicians, too, blame the other side for being the bad guys. This is bad guy behavior. This is the stuff that bad people do when they're choosing to just lie relentlessly to make points that they think are somehow better than the points on the other side. This is not the good guy, not going high when they go low, not any of that stuff that is the rhetoric of the left all the time. And it's amazing how hard it is for them to acknowledge it. It's just as hard for the president right now to admit we're in a recession. And honestly, I think the more and more people see this, whether or not you're actually hardcore on a side of a political aisle or you describe yourself as an independent in the middle, the more often you see the political game play out and people on both sides abuse every part of your intelligence by assuming they can just blatantly lie to you and you'll believe it. And a lot of people do, by the way. I'm not judging them, but I get into conversations where people just spit out talking points. And eventually you get frustrated and you say, hey, do you know what you're talking about? Or have you just heard this enough times in the places you go for your news? They're like, yeah, it's probably true. I don't need to dive any deeper. Case in point is that a lot of people still think the Supreme Court actually banned abortion. That's something people still think. I still bump into people who have conversations with me about how horrible it was that the evil Supreme Court that needs to be, you know, stacked with a bunch more justices on it, banned abortion, made it something that is illegal in our country. And I'm like, yeah, no. That's not a thing that happened. I got to help you out a little bit. But it's just, I think, more and more caused by this ridiculous, ridiculous need to vilify the other side. And The View is one of the worst places to do this. They do that constantly, and they only apologize when they could be sued for a bunch of money. All right, I want to move on to some other stuff I thought that was interesting out there in the world. The first one, just a bit of celebrity news that's odd to me. Britney Spears posted I know, no one thought Britney Spears was coming up. She posted a photo on social media saying she went to a bar for the first time ever in her life. Britney is 40. She said that she had 13 years there where they took away her rights, including the ability to have a cocktail. So that was some of the time she didn't go into a bar. When she was at the height of her fame, it would have been interesting to see Britney Spears and some of the music she was known for and some of the things she was known for just walk into a bar and hang out. I feel like she would have gotten a lot of attention from a lot of people. So I'm not totally shocked. At the same time, it is weird to see her celebrate this and be like, yay, I finally got into a bar. I think what she said on social media is, so glad they took my rights away for 13 years to have a cocktail. I'm so grateful, y'all. But she seemed to be having a good time. So that's just odd news to me, and one that you, I don't even know what you'd say. Like, if Britney Spears was my personal friend, another sentence I didn't think I'd speak today, and she said to me in that way she just put out on social media that she was happy to get into a bar, my answer would be like, yeah, I'm sorry that you went through all that. I don't know what else to say. I'm going to go hit the bathroom because I can't keep talking about this. In other news, I saw this. I thought this was interesting. Madden and their Madden 23 rating system actually has created a hotline, a telephone number that you can call to complain. You can complain or give them compliments if you think the ratings are appropriate or if you think they're wrong. The number, which I can give out, I guess, 689-278-3030. That's the Madden 23 rating hotline, if anyone wants to call it. They say have a bunch of evidence. If you stack up your evidence and think that a rating should be changed for a player in the game, and you actually either leave a message or talk to a ratings consultant, there is a chance they might listen to you and change the rating in the game. What I think is hilarious about this, and this is just an inside baseball in the world of, I guess, video game stuff, is that back in the old days, the days that I remember when I played video games, not the now where you actually do it on television sometimes, people make millions of dollars, and young people will sit watching YouTube videos that make no sense to me of just some guy playing a game for several hours. You're not playing the game. You're watching someone else do it. But I digress. Anyway, back in the yestertime that I'm from, you could just change the rating yourself. You didn't need to call a hotline and beg for a rating to be changed. If your favorite player was Tom Brady and he's got a 97, but you want it to be a 99, you can do it. Also, if you're spiteful like I was as a Giants fan, you might down Tom Brady's rating quite a bit and change it to something else. This didn't need to be a decision by committee. I think it's hilarious. I think the fact that a bunch of players likely are calling this number too, according to the news, and begging for the game to change their rating themselves is sort of amazing. It talks about, I guess, how, or it demonstrates how significant video games have become, at least to younger people. Because I know a whole lot of people, when I talk about this thing, do not care and have not cared the entire time, the entire run of this stuff. There is an e-sports facility somewhat close to where I live, and I have seen some events that take place there, and like the big crowd shows up, and it really is a bigger crowd than you'd think, and they play whatever the game is that I don't even recognize. And I noticed that everyone there, the people playing the game and the people in the audience, are all very young. There are not a lot of people in any generation. I don't even think I see a lot of millennials, maybe some. I see mostly Gen Z, some millennials, no Gen X, nobody else. So it is hilarious that it is so significant, so popular, but only to a certain subset of our society. A quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show. When Chad is off, he still works, which is impressive. Here he is with a message about Rough Greens.
RUFFGreens.com/Chad. RoughGreens.com/Chad. I give it to my dogs every single day. It is amazing. People have been asking my dogs very kindly. All, they're fine. Totally good. Everything's good. They, you know, had a knife. Comfy place to stay while we enjoyed the hotel. So they were living life large. But I made sure to tell the people, hey, sprinkle this on top of their dog food. They love it. It's good for them. They asked me, what is it? I said, well, it's got vitamins, minerals, probiotics, omega-3, 6, 9. It's like this incredible thing. They were very curious about it. I have a feeling they're gonna try a bunch for all of the animals they watch. And the reason is simple. It works. My dog Doodle is no longer limping in pain. Right? We got him. He was much older than they said he was. You know, mileage may vary. Well, his mileage seemed to be close to the end. We thought we had to put him to sleep a few years ago since we started him on Rough Greens. More energy, no skin issues, and his joint pains and hips, so much better. Try it for yourself. Rough Greens, I want to send you a bag for free. It's not going to cost you anything except for, yes, kids, I'm going to say it, shipping. Ooh, a few bucks. It's on its way to you. RuffGreens.com/Chad. 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 Chad Benson Show.
Hello. Helen Keller is a Nazi terrorist that is a male. Is that what you're telling me right now?
Yeah.
Are you thinking of Hitler?
Who's Hitler?
Vaccines work, but only the Chad Benson Show is 100% effective against stupidity.
Do you know what D-Day is?
What?
D-Day.
In person? A rapper?
God, Karen, you are so stupid.
Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and wherever you find your favorite woke-free podcasts. This is the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Chad will be back after the weekend. I do think it's interesting, a poll out that asked Americans, I think like 10,000 people answered it, to rate the most overrated breakfast foods. The reason why I think this is so ridiculous, avocado toast was number one, by the way. I'm a millennial, but I think that's fine. 57% of people said that avocado toast is overrated because it is. Because I think mostly it's just a joke. It's good. You put an avocado on toast, it's fine. There's a lot of stuff you can put on toast and have a lovely morning. So I do think that's right. But when we get to number three on this list, I think people were just trolling the list. Number two, by the way, a smoothie bowl. Depending on who you are, I have some people, some friends that would tell you, no, smoothie bowls are amazing. They are definitely not overrated, even though 53% of those who answered the survey said yes. I have other people that are like, yeah, I don't care. But number three was bacon, and that is sacrilege. That's a fight. That's a conversation that we shouldn't be having. Bacon is easily the best thing that comes from a pig. Ham is a very, very far away a version of bacon. Bacon is just so superior. 36% of people, though, said that bacon is overrated. And I think that that is drunk. I think that's insanity. Other things on the list, donuts, 33%. Yogurt parfaits, 32%. 30% said that cereal and biscuits and gravy tied as overrated. Apparently, we just think everything in the breakfast food items, every single part of it, is definitely at least a little overrated. And I think they're wrong on that whole premise, too, because I know a lot of people, myself included, that prefer breakfast as the meal of the day. It is the best of the meals. The only thing that makes it better is the best food item known to man, which is a steak. Steak and bacon is a fine decision. I know that people... mostly health people would tell you that's a terrible move, but they're wrong. They're tremendously wrong on that. Other news, other things I saw out there in the world. I like this one a lot. By 2050, apparently we will have two things, according to a futurist, Dr. James Bellini. And I don't know that any of that makes any sense at all, by the way. I don't really care what the futurists are saying. But by 2050, we'll have two things that should creep you out. A waterless dishwasher and a self-stocking refrigerator. Those are things he said. The refrigerator might actually use drones to stock itself, so it might be able to communicate with whatever it is your purchase platform of choice, fire out a drone, or ask for a drone to be sent over. The drone goes into the fridge and stocks it. You get home, all your items are there. Or waterless dishwashers, and this would be something to help with any of the water issues we're facing. Both of these sound very creepy to me. I can't pick which one is truly creepier, but I'm leaning toward the self-stocking refrigerator because a lot of things could go wrong, could go rogue, and also it's definitely alive. If there's a point where it's deciding what to put in my daily meals or what to put inside my open fridge every day, I don't know if I can trust it or robots at all. That's the beginning of the uprising, at least to me. One other story I saw that I thought was pretty funny and out there, and it's not because I like criminals or high-speed chases or any of that stuff. I do like a good action movie, but in real life, I'm usually anti this stuff. But it was the explanation more so than anything else. A woman, 27, in Las Vegas, her name is Angela, and an unnamed guy that I probably need to find the name of at some point, have been doing a very unique, very specific crime for the last few weeks or so, and they finally got caught. They've been stealing Red Bull, just Red Bull, from convenience stores, from grocery stores. They made off with $2,500 worth of product. A few weeks ago, they showed up at one of those grocery stores that they had previously robbed before, and they only got $100 worth of Red Bull this time because they were caught fairly quickly and had to run and flee. And then the cops chased them, and as I said, high-speed chase over 100 miles an hour, and you eventually pull the woman, Angela, over, and you just ask her. And I guess this is what the police did. Like, why? Why is this a thing you're doing? Are you selling the Red Bull? There's a $2,500 bond now or bail out for them, so they're in the hoosegow, and they're probably going to get more legal trouble. But she said she just loves it. She's like, I'm just a huge fan. I'm just addicted to Red Bull. I need it to live my life. I've seen all the commercials. I've bought into it. So for me, it's just something I need, and I'm just taking it. To me, I don't know. A part of it's hilarious. And I do hear baked in there, whether they want it to be or not, a commercial for Red Bull. I do hear them at some point being like, Red Bull gives you wings and at times creates an addiction so bad you go to jail. Because I do think that's something that might help. Fred, I'm an energy drinker, by the way. I'm an energy drink guy, and I'm not a Red Bull guy specifically. But I guess I sort of just kind of maybe to an extent understand the addiction part, not the stealing all the Red Bull and going on the chase. I do think also, by the way, just one last thing, the reason they eventually pulled over, because that's how they got caught. They didn't actually like get steered off the road. They just pulled over and stopped after 15 minutes or so. I imagine they ran out of Red Bull. To me, that's the assumption I'd make, that they just had no more product. So they had to go ahead and make another pit stop of some kind. But good luck to them both. I think that they're probably going to be regretting a lot of the decisions they made. All right. As I said, Craig Collins filling in. A lot more Chad Benson Show coming up in just a little bit. I do want to talk more about this technical definition of recession, which I hate that I'm doing because I feel like the Democrats are forcing this conversation on us. But there's so much audio, Nancy Pelosi, Bill Clinton, so many others telling us the definition is what they're saying it's not from back in the day. I think Nancy is from 2008. Bill is from like 2000. But time after time, you can find a Democrat saying that the definition of recession is 2 months of negative growth. And now they're bringing out pie charts and being insane and trying to tell us that we're not in a recession when we obviously are. That coming up and more. Craig Collins, like I said, filling in on the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. Independent thoughts, independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Chad will be back after the weekend. A really awesome take from Van Jones I'm going to get to in just a second because I can't help how awesome I think it is. And I am definitely being sarcastic in case you can't tell. But before that, I mentioned this a little bit ago. There are several videos popping up now of Democrats previously in their time in office, Nancy Pelosi back in 2008, Bill Clinton when he was the president back in 2000, defining what a recession is. The reason that this stuff is coming up is such a self-inflicted wound for Democrats in this administration and Biden, and ridiculously trying to say that we're not in a recession because of outlying other number stuff. Here is Nancy telling us what a recession is in 2008.
And so while they may have saved the second quarter from a technical definition of recession, the fact is we are now into the third quarter and we need to have another stimulus package.
Yeah, she also wants another stimulus package. That technical definition she was talking about back in 2008 was two quarters of negative growth because that did not occur. Here is Bill Clinton saying the same thing.
Well, a recession is two quarters in a row of negative growth.
What's that now? Wait, what? What'd you say?
Well, a recession is two quarters in a row of negative growth. I don't think we're going to have.
I can't imagine, again, why this administration is like, nah. We're not in a recession. We're seeing some things happen, but some other stuff. But then I guess you can also play this. This is our president, Joe Biden, lying again and again. I could play that on a lot of topics, I guess. But this is about Hunter Biden. 14 of Hunter's business associates visited with him when he was the vice. 14, we now know, interacted with Vice President Biden. And time and again, he has denied even knowing about, like, I feel like his lie was so egregious because it was almost akin to my son does business stuff. I had no idea. I had no idea he was making money on the side. I don't know what he does for a living. I've never asked him.
I have never discussed with my son or my brother or anyone else anything having to do with their businesses, period. I've never discussed my business
never
or their
it.
Business, my son's
Why would I do it?
And I've never discussed it.
I'm just his father, and sometimes he randomly makes millions of dollars. I never ask about
I've
that.
I've never spoken to my son about his overseas business.
I don't discuss business
any
with my
of that.
Son. And because I don't discuss things with my son or my family, because I don't want to have any knowledge of any, I don't want to be accused of, well, you talk with your son or you talk with your...
I do it because I don't want to get in trouble for it. And then the Fox News story.
President Biden met with at least 14 of Hunter's business associates while he was vice president.
At least 14 he's met with while he was vice president. But no, he's never had any of those conversations at all. He's totally fine. We don't know why. This president is someone that you can't believe when he talks about inflation being transitory, when he talks about the recession not being a real recession. We can't figure it out, is essentially what Corinne Jean-Pierre told us. But here's Van Jones' take, and I love this take so, so much from CNN, because every time you turn on something very politically far to the side, what can amuse you more than anything else is their desperate attempt to spin things to be positive. And this is as desperate as it gets.
But the reality is, to lead means to go first. Biden has been there pushing, trying to get something done on climate. He promised he would get it done. It's going to get done. He's been pushing to get something done on the chips and the semiconductors. So, listen, if you just erase the past 6 months of nutty stuff, it looks like you've got a president that can get an infrastructure bill done, get COVID stuff done, get something done for the American people on climate, get something done on chips. That's a successful presidency.
That's a successful president. You just got to drop out 6 months of the time he's been in office where the nutty stuff has happened. And once you get past that, man, it's all smooth sailing. How long has he been in office? Oh, just a little over a year? Oh, well, just 6 months of it is all we got to erase. And then we find a guy who's doing things right, who's doing things well for our side of the party. Other people would say no, that spending money right now, the amount of money, the billions and trillions of dollars right now is the dumbest thing you could possibly do. It is the more government spending right now could be akin to insanity and more nutty stuff, if you're trying to say it the nice way and you're being Van Jones about it. But I love that, by the way. I love the version of, no, it's not been as bad as you think. We just got to eliminate a certain subset of time. I mean, what if former President Trump runs for re-election and tries to run on a platform where the economy was great, except during COVID, something he'd say, he'll get torn apart by Republicans for saying that. And yet this person is trying to say that you just got to eliminate part of the time that Biden's been in office and everything will be great. There are two supercuts out there over the last couple of days that you've probably heard before that I do think are very interesting. One of them is a more current supercut talking about how lie after lie has been thrown out there in the world of recession. The other one is actually the exact same thing about inflation, because in both scenarios, this administration has lied again and again about, oh, we're not in this, or it's transitory, or it's something different than whatever you think it is. And so when you get to the point that you finally see them have to own one of those two, because they haven't had to own both, they've only had to own one of those two issues, you just can't wait for the second one to happen. But here's one of the two I'm talking about. This is the one about the recession specifically. This is the one that's going to look bad. It does already look bad to some, but to a whole lot more people in the very near future.
All signs are that this is a strong economy, and the probability of a recession within the next year is not particularly elevated.
It's a strong economy, and nothing about it suggests that it's close to or vulnerable to a recession.
I don't expect a recession.
No one is predicting a recession now.
We are not expecting that we are already in a recession. In fact, the guts and the bones of this economy remain strong.
These are not the marks of an economy in recession.
Right now, we don't see a recession. Right now, we're not in a recession right now.
This is not an economy that's in recession.
No, we're fine. Everybody's fine. Except Bill Clinton, Nancy, and a lot of other people say, yeah, no, it is. It is a recession. That's exactly what it looks like. But we're doing great. And as I said, there's another supercut of just a viral moment after viral moment of people saying inflation wasn't real, it was transitory. Biden saying that inflation, all those numbers that had happened, that had gone up, were predictable. He was talking specifically about energy over a year ago because he caused it to go up, but that's all just the stuff we knew was going to happen. The rest of it'll be fine. I was also having a conversation the other day, and I know a lot of data now, a lot of reports out there are saying that Republicans are starting to prefer Ron DeSantis to Donald Trump. I know people probably have strong opinions on both sides of that conversation, that argument. Although I would say that I think a lot of people do believe if you support one, you probably support the other. So both would probably not, I think, struggle to gain the supporters if they are inevitably elected. for the primary or whatever. But what I think is important about it, as I was having this conversation with someone, is all of these challenges we're facing right now, all of the things, energy prices as high as they are, inflation as bad as it is all stuff that former President Trump predicted and said would happen. And the fact that it's happening as significantly as it's happening, even the failed exit in Afghanistan, I think has continued to play into the hands of that individual. As I said, I know that I've seen the data. I've seen the information, and a lot of people say that maybe it's a time to move on from a former President Trump to someone younger like a DeSantis. If we're talking about the Democratic side of the aisle real quick, and I can't even believe that this is a real thing, but it is. When you look at the poll numbers for the people who they'd want to run for office, because Democrats 100% do not want Biden to run again, and you look at some of the names on this list, there are some fairly unsurprising ones. Michelle Obama ranks number two for people that Democrats would like to see run for office. But number six on the list right now, barely separated from even number three, which is Elizabeth Warren, is AOC. On the Democratic side of the aisle, they're so intent on seeing something so dramatically far to a certain side that they'd like to see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez try to become the president, the youngest president ever, barely turning 35 in time. It is surreal to think about a place that we're at where those kind of things are conversations that happen. A lot of people on the right would be thrilled, they say, at an AOC nomination and running anyone against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the likelihood that you'd trip her up on some things. But it's just amazing, again, to think that like the Democratic Party is so broken, even when they're in power, because they are currently in power, and so broken that you have viral video after viral video of people saying they're not sure they want to see Biden run again. They don't actually say it quite like that, but they certainly don't say they'd like to see him run. Just everything about this is amazing. And then still, as we're talking about all this, the president and his team is trying to lie to us once again and hope we don't notice. A quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show. But Chad works even when he has time off. Here he is with a message about Eden Pure.
Eden Pure Deals.com. Amazing, incredible deals there with the Eden Pure Oxyleaf 2 Thunderstorm. Now, let me tell you something. The best air purifier around. You know how I know? We went home yesterday. We weren't home for 3.5 days. We had zero power in the house. All the food is gross. Everything, you know, all the stuff. It was because of our massive, you know, we had a huge storm and a microblast burst that hit us. Our house smelled fine. Now, the refrigerators smelled. You would never know. Other people coming back to their homes are like, this place stinks. I'll get Eden Pure. The best air purifiers. We only have three. They're little small ones out of the way. Plug them into the wall. You never hear them, but the difference they make, and the difference is incredible, and you will smell that difference. Oh, yes, you will. Right now, save $200 by going to EdenPureDeals.com. Use code CHAD3. They're going to give you free shipping as well. The best air purifiers around, and the fact that our house is still smelling delicious is testament to that. EdenPureDeals.com. Use code CHAD3. EdenPureDeals.com. Code CHAD3.
Welcome to Chad. No, not the country. The institution. The Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Happy to have you with us on a Friday. Chad is back after the weekend. A politician wants to make ghosting a crime. This is not here in the United States. This is a Filipino politician. He said that it's emotionally offensive and he'd like to make it illegal. Ghosting, if you don't know what that is, a dating term, where maybe you start to get to know somebody, maybe you've been on a few dates, I don't even know how far it could go, and then eventually they disappear from your life. They stop answering all texts, all phone calls, and essentially they are no longer a person that will respond to anything you send or ask them to do. Making it fully illegal sounds insane. I don't think that there'd be any actual like jail time involved in the pitch, and I think this came out about a month ago, but it's just going viral now. But there's a proposed bill in that country the House of Representatives have thrown on the floor that says it's emotional cruelty and it should be punished by someone who can go ahead and get some cash for being ghosted. What is amazing about it, just to me, just very quickly, is say there's a person who gets ghosted a lot out there. They would almost start wanting to be ghosted for the money, the lawsuits that they could go. It's about $10,000 U.S. if you prove in court that you were ghosted by somebody who led you on. That's insane. That's fully insane. And sometimes, no matter how much I make fun of the politicians here, I am glad we don't have things like this, because all the insanity we have, we've never gone. Although I can't totally put it past anyone. Who knows? Maybe if it works over there, they'll start to think about it. And then all of a sudden, boom, we have that being thrown up by the Democrats as a win for Biden. Ghosting now illegal. They do love to appeal to millennials, to appeal to young people, talk about how they're going to forgive student loans. So maybe this is a thing that happens. In other news, I saw this story, and the headline's a little misleading. It says a real-life Jurassic Park might be coming to a future near you. And that's not totally true. A new company wants to bring back just one animal, one dinosaur, the woolly mammoth. Not all of them, not put them in an amusement park, not ask you to pay money to go in and see them. The reason why is the thing I like the most, though. And by the way, science studying things and trying to make stuff is how we get into a lot of our messes. There's jokes out there. Actually, Jon Stewart says one where the end of the world is going to be a scientist saying, oh, my God, I can't believe that worked. And then it's going to be over for us all. This feels like one of those moments of you should not do this, science. Don't keep considering this. Please back up immediately. But the reason they're saying they want to, as I said, is something I find wildly entertaining. It's to fight climate change. It's real. The company is saying that the woolly mammoth specifically, and a lot of elephants, are just better than other animals at, quote, stomping down snow and knocking down trees, which creates larger areas of grasslands, which help with the permafrost, which somehow help preserve our society and prevent climate change. This is an idea that I do see making its way all the way to the Biden White House. I can see in the next spending bill, when they're talking about the billions and billions of dollars that they're throwing at stupid things out of the trillions of dollars that they're throwing at all kinds of things, that they would say, we need woolly mammoths, man. We just need some. We need them back. And then he might even run on that if he tries to get reelected. I'm the president that brought back the woolly mammoth. But I did. I saw it, and I loved the fact that it was actually tied to climate change. I don't know. I would again recommend they do not do this. This is just me, just my assumption, but I don't think you should do this. All right. I have two topics I want to talk about relatively quickly just before a break. I do this because they're both a little bit adult in nature, and I understand I'm on the radio, so I say this is an earmuffs moment if the kids want to put earmuffs, but I'll do it. I'll handle it delicately. There are two stories out there in the news that have a weird component to them that I can't get over. The first one are these very big Game of Thrones fans, I guess this couple. They travel to one of the areas for that show, King's Landing, one of the like iconic places in that TV show that's been off television for a little bit now. And they proceed to get romantic, is the way that I'm going to describe it on the radio, in that area. They got arrested for their public display of romance. And it's certainly not the kind of thing that I would recommend anyone do. However, I would say, just quickly, if anyone saw Game of Thrones, they were acting a lot like the show. They were doing a lot of the things that you could see in the television show. But that's not the right way to celebrate your fandom of a television show, travel across the country or across the world, and then go ahead and get arrested for something you shouldn't be doing in public. The other one is actually even more unique. This is a military museum in Poland. Apparently, a Facebook post went up recently by law enforcement there begging people to stop getting romantic inside the Polish military museum. The reason why they're saying this happens, I guess, is that this place has become fairly popular to bring a date. Women can't resist a man in uniform is what's put up on the post. And so because of that assumption that you bring people to a museum that celebrates the history of the country that's, I don't think, well-known for a lot of military successes, but they have their own military museum. You bring them over, and then you say, hey, look, I don't know if you wanted to, whatever. I don't want to describe that in any more detail. Get romantic is what I want to say. And it's been working. It's been working so much so that the police are begging people to stop. They do have cameras. They do have equipment set up in that museum. I guess some people have figured out how to get around those cameras, or some people just don't care about them. But it's something they need you or need your help with preventing. That's odd. And I don't have a better reaction beyond that. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show. More in a bit.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent thoughts, independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. A new study came out this week that said police officers use force in less than 1% of arrests. Less than 1% of arrests does a police officer actually use force. Discharging their weapon is even rarer than that. This study seems to fly in the face of anyone who wants to say that the police are typically an organization that is overly aggressive. A lot of the conversations we have in our society today, a lot of the things we look at and deal with on this front just come from the things that media, politicians tell us, or as I say, the viral news stories that capture the attention of many people. The problem with any of those sources, politicians and media, definitely lots of problems there, but is that there's agenda, there's purpose behind it, and certainly when something goes viral, the expectation that every single thing that ever happens exactly like this is just a lazy thing that our society does. But the new research demonstrates it's actually 0.78% of sampled arrests used police force, and 0.03% actually had weapons that they discharged or got fired. Most prisoners are inside for serious crimes. As many as 80% reoffend within a decade of release. All of these things matter in the conversation we have about whether or not any of the things that happen in our society need to be rethought, in my opinion. And it's just, I think it's just valuable to put this information out in the world as many times as possible because of how rarely it's talked about, how rarely we have that conversation. Instead, I can shift gears and show one of the other things that is just odd about the political society we live in today. But I just thought that information was important enough to stand on its own. The baseball game that occurs, the congressional baseball game, is a unique time for our political society because it's one of the only times in where bipartisan involvement is required to do something that's America's pastime. By the way, just real quick, since I'm an insanely big baseball fan, the hot stove season, the just before the trade deadline, is one of the things that makes baseball such a great sport. I think the best sport because of how things move and how it's actually all names of players and minor league players. It's not draft picks and whatnot. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the political thing. So Linda Sanchez, one of the players on the Democratic side from California, actually gave the middle finger to the entire GOP bench when she was trotting back after getting walked to first base and getting replaced by another politician as a replacement runner. It was sort of amazing to see, and it's the kind of thing we see a lot. And actually, the guys doing the play-by-play laughed and didn't describe it very well, but you definitely see it on the video. What I think is really interesting is that the GOP shut out Democrats 10-0 to win the second consecutive congressional baseball game, to win their second consecutive one. So once again, even though you're doing the display, the anger, the whatever it is, you're getting just crushed on the actual field itself. I know that's something that probably doesn't matter to anybody in that situation, but I do think it's something that's fairly important because if you're going to throw the middle finger down and then you realize that, wait a minute, we are not at all winning this game, to me, from the sports perspective, you look a little silly. All right. I do want to play some Corinne Jean-Pierre audio, too, just shifting even more into the world of politics. I think it's interesting, the continued conversation, the resistance to all things that are inflation, all things that are owning any part of the recession we're going through now. It's sort of incredible. But then when you see the Democrats seem to have enough unity now to try to pass a trillions of dollar budget plan, spending bills, you realize that all of this is just to try to get them to convince you that more spending is smart when it's definitely not. But here's Corinne saying how Biden saved our economy, didn't spiral it into recession, because they deny that's happening.
When you look at the economy, how he was able to turn it back on when he walked in, businesses were shut down, schools were shut down.
And I love that again, too, by the way, because that is Corinne Jean-Pierre using what Democrats did to this country. The things that former President Trump tried to resist in the world of a shutdown, what Democrats did, and then Biden turned it back on. He also did promise that he would get rid of COVID. He would destroy, get rid of the virus, it'd be over. That has profoundly failed, if that's a reassurance he's still even going after. Here is even more of Corinne Jean-Pierre talking about the recession issues, lowering inflation, all the stuff we're going to do to help out, to fix things there. Not usually a lot of valuable answers coming from this White House press secretary.
I'm wondering where the White House sought assurances that the tenets of that legislation would, in fact, lower inflation.
I mean, I'm not gonna get into
any of that
specifics or.
Yeah, I'm not gonna talk about that. We want to spend more money, and we want that money that we spend to actually cause inflation to go down. And we're saying it out loud, but you want me to explain it to you? Please, I don't know if you're new here. That's not what this administration does. One last thing I liked in the world of Corinne Jean-Pierre, and it's not her just saying over and over again, "I have nothing for you. I have no answer to that. I'm sorry." It was her being asked about Hunter Biden. This story is breaking again. 14 different business associates of Hunter Biden met with then Vice President Joe Biden, something that seems bad, especially when our president, then the vice president, said he had no idea about any of the business dealings of his son. But when Corinne Jean-Pierre refuses to answer questions on this issue, it tells you, like it always has, that there's still more here, and somehow it's still not a daily conversation in a lot of news places.
Also, relatedly, on the China call, online business records suggest that the first son still holds a 10% stake in a Chinese investment fund. Is it possible to have basic transparency there on whether he actually divested that stake or not?
So your last questions, I would refer you to his representatives. It's not something that I can speak about from here.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. He's just the son of the president, and him holding a financial stake in a Chinese investment fund would probably be a bad thing for us and for our society. But I can't answer any of those. I'm confused. You'd even ask those kind of questions to me. Let's move on and ask them to someone else. I'm sure his team will get back to you real quick after you ask him that. So don't worry that much about it. I mean, it's amazing. To say it one more time, in case you have missed any part of that story, 14 of the business associates of then President, Vice President Trump, now or Vice President Biden, now our president, 14 business associates met with him while he was in office then through Hunter Biden. I think I just missaid the name Trump because I can't fathom, I can't even comprehend the amount of constant coverage for this kind of conversation. If it were a Trump individual, if it were anybody with the last name Trump, going through any version of, man, we have business holdings here and there, we have confusing situations that we don't want to explain to the press, it would be relentless. The coverage of it would be much like the January 6th stuff that's going on. And by the way, I don't think I have the audio here with me right now. We'll probably get it a little bit later on for the show. But the fact that so much news media, I can't get over this, so much news media described the January 6th committee and the things we're seeing on television as a season finale of a TV show. This went viral a few days ago, was surreal to me. The reason it was surreal is not because they enjoyed it, not because a lot of people don't understand that a lot of media has a bias. However intentional it is, it's definitely there in a lot of places, local places, national places, a lot of places. It seems that news media might breed a certain type of opinion as much as any other reason to have that bias be so significant. But when you joyously and casually talk about something that you claim to be an illegal action by a former president as also must-watch television in the world of primetime TV, which has season finales, which they might be back in September, you buy so far into every part of what would disgust an old-school news person. Someone who would turn over in their grave because they would never have allowed even that tiny bit of bias, and that's a lot, by the way, but any tiny bit, be displayed while they were reporting the news. They would never compare real, genuine news to some sort of viral or television-based show, other show, because they would think that that would be below the news. And I'm not saying I want to go back entirely to that point, although I wish we could get pretty close to back to that version of society that we don't have now. But it was just amazing. There is a viral clip, and I know you can also question the fact that uniform speaking is uncomfortable in the world of news, who's creating that message that gets read so many times in an eerily similar way. But just to be so openly comparing the things that happen in the world of, to them, legitimate news to anything you'd watch for entertainment value means those lines have blurred so significantly in that world that the bias is so far from hidden nowadays. I do want to play one last thing. Just one more enhancement of the whole conversation about, you know, how terrible the approach is, I think, right now for Biden and this administration on convincing people that we're not in a recession. You pluck out just former Democrats, and I played audio of Pelosi and Bill Clinton describing a recession as exactly what we're going through now. But you even have a former Obama economic advisor saying the thing that the New York Times said, which is if you're explaining in recessions, if you're explaining in large detail with many different pieces why and how we're not in something, you're definitely already losing, especially when the American people are living it day to day and feeling the effects of inflation and our economy turning downward.
I mean, it's hard when you're in a circumstance like this where the inflation rate is high. In a way, it doesn't matter what you say. There's going to be a big argument about the what's the definition of recession, but it's going to be it back in the spirit of the if you're explaining, you're losing. If you're fighting about whether it was or was not a recession in the first quarter of this year and looking backward, it's not going to be a comfortable place for the administration.
And it is exactly the place they're in and exactly the decision they make on a daily basis to lose this fight by trying to explain, overly explain in complicated detail and a lot of bullcrap detail why we're not in the thing that people think we're definitely in. All right, I got to take a break. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show. Chad, the hardest working guy in radio, as I say a lot. He works even when he has days off. Here he is with a message about Ruff Greens.
RUFFGreens.com/Chad. Go there, get a free bag of Ruff Greens. Man, seeing Doodle last night, I was telling my wife, he won't leave me alone. He's running around in circles like he's a puppy. He's bouncing around. I don't know what he's doing. It was crazy fun to watch. And I love the fact that he is older and happier than he's ever been. All because the supplement I give him from Ruff Greens. Right? Vitasmart, just amazing. Just sprinkling on top of his food. And away it goes. That's all I did. Nothing different. Didn't change his food. Didn't do anything. Just sprinkle this. Vitamins, minerals, probiotics, omega 369. They love the taste, but the win is how they feel. Started my puppies on it, and Doodle, well, he's living proof, literally living proof that it works. Get your Ruff Greens for free. It's a bag for free. All you have to do is cover the cost of shipping. RUFFGreens.com/Chad. RuffGreens.com/Chad. Go there now. Get a bag for free. RuffGreens.com/Chad.
To be free. I am not a terrorist. I am not Antifa. I am not a sex slave that wears masks.
Don't be a cutie pie.
Probably sit around and cook some soups and eat bread and desserts and just get all fat and sassy.
You're ruining my life, bud!
Yeah, you haven't seen anything yet.
You're listening to The Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Chad is back after the weekend. Pfizer's revenue grew 47% from this time last year, $27.7 billion compared to the second quarter of last year, $27.7. The fact that Pfizer is out there hawking a brand new vaccine, telling people to take it. Here's the thing. I'm not going to dive deep into the weeds of should you take vaccines, should you not take it. I don't really want that to be a conversation that I have. For the most part, I'd rather you just go to whatever medical person you trust and you have a conversation with them about all the things about you and decide whether or not it makes sense for you to get any of this stuff. But the people we should never listen to, the experts, if you even want to call them experts, that should never be put on television, never get to have conversations about what you should do, are the people that work at Pfizer. I think it's hilarious when we see the CEO and other people pop up telling you how important it is to get vaccinated, and then news like this comes out of the ridiculous amount of money that they made in the last quarter. 47% revenue growth. That's a pretty good amount of time for most companies of valuable things happening for their bottom line. And as I said, again, no matter where you want to go have the conversation, whatever platforms you want to listen to or people you want to talk to, do not listen to the people at Pfizer on anything. Just throw their opinion completely out when you talk about any of this stuff. All right, I want to move on to something else. There's a creepy AI. I feel like that's a sentence that just works for a lot of stuff. I don't even have to tell you which one. But this one is called Dolly. It's like a Wally, but I guess I think it's kind of influenced by a lot of like painters and art things. But anyway, this Dolly, I'm enjoying every time I say it, a mini AI image generator has created the last selfie ever taken. It does look like a doll painting, to be honest, but it's real creepy. But here's the thing I couldn't get over in the like sad, older looking face that's somewhat warped. And then the what seems to be Armageddon going on behind them is the idea that toward the end of this whole thing, because of cell phones and all the technology we have now, someone would pop a selfie. That's the thing that I couldn't get over is that Dolly, who I think originally started working on this thing back in June of this year. And thank God we got that product out in the world, assumes like many of us do. That somebody at the when everything's going down, we hope a long, long time from now, and I don't know if they're still even going to have cell phones or some sort of advanced technology, but somebody somewhere is going to be like, man, I got to put this up on the socials. I got to take a social media or a selfie version of this because this is an experience no one's going to believe I went through. No one will be around to see it, but that doesn't matter. But thank you, Dolly, for the creepy, odd thing that exists now. All right, this story I also like a lot. So people recently found a message in a bottle. This was near a tourist location, I believe, in the UK. But the message in the bottle was pretty significant in that it was telling tourists to leave. It essentially said, hello, stranger. If you're here on some sort of vacation, then go home. That's right. And then it says, bleep off. We don't want you here, you annoying people. And then it's signed by people who are locals, and then it says some other derogatory things. But I do really enjoy this, mostly because I imagine some sort of tourist or person that was exploring an area found the bottle, saw the message in it, and you would get hopeful. You'd get excited. You'd reach the bottle out of the water. You'd be like, oh, man, I read about these things. Message in a bottle. I've never experienced one. You crinkle open the paper. You look down at it, and it's telling you to get out. You got to leave because you're not wanted wherever you are. To me, that's hilarious. And I think anybody that's ever lived in an area where a whole lot of tourists go, even though it's not totally the tourist's fault that they're going there and you're living in the area you're living in, most people would like to see all the tourists leave very, very soon. So it's a sentiment I can get behind, a sentiment I can understand. And one again, and maybe I just have a dark sense of humor, that it would amuse me to no end. If I was the one that discovered this message in a bottle, if someone ever wants to somehow troll me and get me a message in a bottle, I want it to be like this. I don't want it to be a hopeful, nice, I hope you're doing well, give me a phone call. I want it to be, get out, you dumb stranger. Quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. Independent thoughts. Independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. This is weird. I feel like I have two different things that feel a little similar. People just apologizing for terrible things they either said or did. Will Smith has broke his silence. I love the way that that's phrased, by the way, because I don't think it was a silence like people really wanted to hear more from Will Smith after he slapped Chris Rock in the face at the Oscars. By and far, the most interesting thing that happened at the Oscars. Usually that show fairly boring. This year, not so much. But he put up like a 5 minute, 44 second, almost a 6 minute video talking about the slap heard around the world, saying how he, regretted it. His actual exact words. I'm not going to play the audio. I was fogged out by that point in response to a question about why he didn't apologize to Chris Rock in his acceptance speech. The fact that they let him give an acceptance speech that night is sort of amazing. He then went on to say, Will Smith, I've reached out to Chris, and the message that came back is he's not ready to talk. When he is ready, he will reach out. I will say to you, Chris, I apologize to you. My behavior was unacceptable, and I'm here when you're ready to talk. You don't have to ever have to talk to him. That's almost weird in and of itself to be like, I'm here whenever you want to call me and talk to me about how I slapped you in the face. I mean, I can't help saying it without laughing. I know it's to a lot of people not funny and a very serious thing. And Will Smith, definitely in the wrong, should not have done it. But it's odd to think at some point Chris Rock's going to be pressured into getting on the phone to let Will Smith tell him on the phone, I'm so sorry. I got up in the middle of an award show and decided to whack you as hard as I could with my hand, open palm, which is more disrespectful to me than if you close-fisted it. Chris Rock did reference it, too, over the weekend, last weekend. That had gone viral. There wasn't much there. He said he doesn't go to the hospital for a paper cut, so he didn't see himself as a victim. But he also said anyone that believes that words can hurt has never been punched in the face, because that usually hurts more. But Chris did seem to think, and he's right in saying it, that he handled it fairly well. That is one celebrity person out there in the world issuing an apology, granted, to another celebrity person out there in the world for a mistake they made. The other one is Whoopi Goldberg. She has now directly apologized as of yesterday to Turning Point USA for categorizing the people at an event they put on as welcoming neo-Nazis, or that neo-Nazis actually attended the event, which is not true. There were protesters and then people who were actually attending an event. And it's just so amazing to me. It's so amazing that this sort of rhetoric is kind of a daily thing, and it's okay on the left, even though it sounds as hateful and as angry as the stuff that they accuse the right of doing every single day. And it's also just lying and making things up. And only because Turning Point USA is so interested, potentially interested, in a lawsuit, they've said a lot of things about contemplating taking legal action, that these sort of things are happening. Now, before I even play the apology from yesterday, I want to play another apology from a few days ago. This is where you lob it to someone else on the team, and then that person actually issues the apology. I think after 2 days of this, where other people on The View were apologizing for Whoopi, you eventually, through I don't know what level of begging or pleading or legal getting involved, convince her to give a crap apology on the air. But the reason that I think it's so interesting to play this other audio first is I think it shows the defiance that I imagine existed within a Whoopi Goldberg to not want to apologize to Turning Point USA, a group of people that she doesn't comprehend who they are, what they do. I barely think she even knows about the existence of that group based on the things she said. And it does ring very similarly to the other recent controversy of hers when she talked about the Holocaust not being about race and Nazis not being racist because everyone was white. Those are things she actually said, and then even didn't fully take back when she did her apology tour appearance on Stephen Colbert. She continued to seem to say a thing that is just utterly untrue and a thing that would be deeply offensive to a lot of people. But here we are again, and it's not similar, I would say. I think this is a big deal, but maybe not to that level of a big deal. Still a very big deal. Legally, they can get in a lot of trouble, where she still seems to be resisting the need to go ahead and take herself off whatever pedestal she's put herself on of being more important than the rest of us.
Okay, so you have to read this thing.
Oh, I've got a legal note.
You have to read this thing, meaning I'm not going to read this thing.
The conservative group.
Sunny normally does this, but you.
I know. Yes. This is our knockoff lawyer. Okay. The conservative group, Turning Point USA, has condemned the group of neo-Nazis and said they have nothing to do with the organization.
Yeah, but where was DeSantis? Is what I want to know.
But you let them in.
President, open your
you let them in and you knew what they were.
No.
So you are complicit.
That didn't happen. So that was after the apology, where Joy Behar starts yelling about DeSantis, which is just ridiculous. And then Whoopi says, you let them in, you are complicit. And that's still not true. So eventually, after the bad apologies and the anger and the standing up and trying to fight as much as you can, you get this version from Whoopi days later. The thing is, she's going to say that she got something wrong and she dislikes it when this happens to her. But it took her days not to understand the nuance of her mistake, but to accept the fact that her voice was going to be needed in this apology.
Welcome back. You know, in Monday's conversation about Turning Point USA, I put the young people at the conference in the same category as the protesters outside. And I don't like it when people make assumptions about me. And it's not any better when I make assumptions about other people, which I did. So, my bad. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So, the
my bad. I'm sorry. Let's move on. Turning Point USA did put that up on their social media page yesterday saying, what do you guys think? Should we accept this apology? Most people who follow their Twitter account said no, that is a crap apology. That's hilarious. To me, that's hilarious. Like, everything about this is and I don't mean to be repetitive and to say the same thing, but it's just so abundantly true that you can tell. And I mentioned this earlier. I have been in at least one situation in my career where someone of fairly high profile was being asked to do a thing and was trying to resist a thing that they were being asked to do and trying to tell a lot of people they're not going to do it. And I saw the friction of bosses, of other coworkers, of other departments trying to get involved in asking the public-facing person to do something that they inevitably actually didn't do. Legal wasn't quite as involved. It wasn't anything like this. But I saw the defiance that can exist in people. And there's nuance in all of these situations. But in Whoopi's case, she's just utterly wrong, legally responsible. And it took her an entire week to say anything. And it again rings. And I don't know if a lot of people will still even really care about this. I think you definitely should in the world of things like The View and Whoopi and everyone else. It rings of the Colbert interview. The Colbert interview where she was already in trouble, already saying that she essentially in the first part of the interview with Colbert after the Nazi claim that it wasn't about race, saying that, you know, she was wrong. She's sorry. They take a break. They come back. And what she said next was, you know, it really wasn't about race to him, to Stephen. And he's just sitting there like, wow, it's still a feeling you have. And so I don't know when those ears open up enough, the individuals that are spouting that the other side is evil and that their side is good, eventually notice all the sins. It's the don't throw stones in a glass house thing. All the sins of your own side. When you realize just how many crazy out there, wrong, intentionally wrong, angry, and I think hateful things that are said sometimes. And you go, all right, you know what? I see now that maybe I don't think this happens for Whoopi anytime soon, but I wish for many people it would. I don't even think Will Smith is really honest in his apology either, which I think is interesting. And I think Chris Rock is right to not want to have that conversation anytime soon or at all. I would say to Chris Rock, I don't know if he listens to this program. I'm not sure. Do not ever get on that phone and accept that apology. You don't have to. Will can move on. You can move on. You don't have to be in the same place again, or at least talk to each other in the same place again, and that'll be just fine. The man stood up and open hand slapped you in the face in public. One last thing I want to talk about, just a sillier thing, and then we'll take a break. An artist is trying to charge $6,000 for a pickle portrait. That's a real thing. I love this. The guy is in, I think, New Zealand. He stuck a pickle to the ceiling of his home. The pickle actually came from McDonald's burger. And for some reason, because he's a little bit well-known as an artist, it's now on display and likely to sell for $6,000. That's right. The guy who calls himself an artist, and again, I don't know how you get to that point in art where you can do things that dumb, that like, I put this pickle on my ceiling and that's worth some money, and actually make money on it. I deride the TikTok stars and everybody else and how much money they're worth. But that hustle is much harder than a guy who can make $6,000 through this version of art. But just the fact that it's willing to sell and it's going to be out there in the world is hilarious to me. And most importantly, and this is what I'll say before I take a break, someone who eventually buys it, puts it on display in their home, and has guests visit them over their house will get to say a sentence that I'll never get to say. And it's when you see some people for the first time in a while and they're like, hey, guys, I'd like to have you over. Have you seen my pickle art? Have you seen my pickle painting? I got it hanging up in the back. I got my pickle. You guys got to come see my pickle. I just love the fact that some man is going to say that somewhere in the world. And I would decline that offer, by the way, if it was thrown my direction. A quick break, a lot more. Greg Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show.
Eden Pure should get a bunch of those for the White House so they can get rid of all the bad mojo in there. And we can replace the odors of with some brilliant Oxyleaf 2 Thunderstorm. She just liked the way I said the thunderstorm. It is incredible. I keep telling the story. We went home. 3 days without power. 3 days, no power. All of our food was bleh. And normally you think, oh God, it's going to be awful. Nothing, not a smell in the house. Thank goodness for Eden Pure. The best air purifier. You just plug it right in the wall. You never have to worry about filters again. It's quiet. It's out of the way. It makes no noise. And you just sit there and you just let it do its thing. And it does its thing. And it does it well. And it's quiet. And it doesn't mask odors. It kills them. Get yours now. Save $200. Free shipping. You go to EdenPureDeals.com. Use code Chad and the number 3. So Chad 3. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Chad 3 saves you $200 for the best air purifier around, the last one you'll ever need. It will have you smelling the difference in moments. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Chad 3.
Serving up talk radio medium rare and dripping with irony. It's Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Chad is back on Monday. I think that this is a pretty interesting story. Five bystanders helped save a mother and a child from a car that was sinking after it got submerged in water, rolled off the road in Nova Scotia, Canada. This is what some of the people said about springing to action to save lives. Every time we talk about the division that exists in our society, I know this is in Canada, not our country, but the division that exists other places, I think it's refreshing to remember that in times of need, in times of you know, actual distress, humans do respond the way we all expect them to. Most people anyway do. We try to protect and save each other. Here they are talking about what it's like trying to save lives.
What happened to it? Did someone drive it in?
After parking the car, she was trying to get her stuff out of the car. At the same time, the car starts sliding into the water.
The lady was shouting so much. When we jumped in the water, we didn't know that there was a baby in the car.
We have to do something, because if we call the 911, they have to take some time to reach there. It's too far from town.
I think if we get delay 1 or 2 minutes, maybe there's a loss of lives.
Yeah, so they save lives. These people, and you hear this all the time, where people just jump, spring into action, do things to help out when they see someone in distress. They're like, I don't know, we didn't want to call 911. We just wanted to do whatever our part was to save the woman, and then realize there was a child too. So that's cool. It's cool to think that those divisions immediately go away whenever something like that occurs, because you see it all the time. If somebody even falls over on the street, you see someone like try to help pick them back up. Those moments matter when we talk about like actual everyday people and not the politicians and all the other crap that exists in our world. I want to play this. I love this. This might be something totally different, though. A kid was reading lyrics to a pop song. The pop song is called I Love It, to his grandmother. The grandmother was having none of it and definitely hated the song. I want this grandmother to show up in more stuff. I want her to react maybe to the things that people say in their songs today. I can definitely think of one fairly high profile rap song with some an acronym in it that she might really dislike, the grandma. But here is what happens when a kid reads you some lyrics out loud and you're not a fan.
I got this feeling on the summer day when you were gone. I crashed my car into a bridge. I washed it. I let it burn.
What the heck are you doing?
I crashed my car into the bridge. I don't care. I love it.
Are you a little crazy boy? I don't understand you at all. Why would you crash a car into a bridge for any reason whatsoever?
Because
you're destructive and you're just...
Because I don't care. I love it.
Well, you better change your love.
You better change your love. You're destructive and I don't like it. It's probably my favorite part of that moment when she's like, no, this is not okay. I'm not happy with anything you just said, little boy.
A bridge for any reason whatsoever.
Because I...
Destructive and
you're destructive?
I don't care. I love it.
Well, you better change your love.
Yeah, you better change. I feel like that's a nice sentence at the end there. You better change this thing you're bragging about, because a lot of the stuff you guys talk about in these pop songs, I'm not having today. I think she does. She needs to go to concert after concert We need to hand her a microphone, and when the lyrics get a little bit suspect, let Grandma dive in there and tell us what's what. In other news, I saw this. I like this story a lot. A farmer has figured out, and I think we've seen studies and information like this before. He's a pig farmer. That his pigs are just genuinely happier when he's playing the music. He says they like a whole lot of music. Classical is one of their favorite types of music. But it's a phenomenon that was first noticed by his son when he started singing while he was out dealing with the pigs in the farm. Then they started playing music for the pigs. And I don't know if you notice just like the bounce in the step, what it is about the pigs. They're like, now they're just doing better. Everything seems happier. But now music is a constant on the farm and something that I guess a lot of other farmers, a lot of other people have talked about in the world of a lot of different animals, not just in the world of the pig. You know what? And actually, just real quick, I found this to be true about my new puppy, my dog, that I probably talk about more than I should on radio shows. I'm sorry about that. She has trouble going to sleep sometimes, and I just throw on some classical music, and it settles the dog right down. I don't know what that's about. It's confusing to me, but it seems to work. And I guess if the pigs are happier, maybe it makes everything that the pigs make better. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I just know that it's an interesting idea and one that I like the way they described it or the way that they discovered it was if the kid was just standing out there during whatever chore he was doing and just sort of singing and everybody was like, no, this is working. Things are getting way better super fast. But we'll see if they keep going down that road. All right, a quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson Show.
Independent thoughts, independent life. This is Chad Benson.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Craig Collins filling in. I am thrilled to bring my next guest on the air. Her name is Jessica Tharp. She is with the Better Business Bureau. Two things just real quickly, Jessica, that I think out there have value as we start a conversation here. Of course, people talking a lot about recession, people talking a lot about inflation. But also I saw that Amazon posted a second quarter set of losses for that company. And one of the reasons why they say is that consumers are returning to stores. If we start here on that conversation, how important is it for businesses that are trying to navigate all the challenges of the world we live in right now to retain, to grow a good customer relationships? And how can the BBB kind of advise and help with that?
Yeah, that's a great conversation topic. You know, that is the focus of businesses right now is how can I survive? You know, some are even thinking, how can I excel? And local businesses have an advantage, really, if they focus on one thing, and that is what you just mentioned, building customer relationships. So it's a different mindset than just customer service alone. Customer service is more of a reactive standpoint for the business where they're just responding to, hey, my thing is broken, or I want to return it, or something like that. If they think about it in terms of building relationships in a proactive way, how can I foster this relationship with this customer? Because repeat business is where that value comes in to the business. These people are going to want to come back to you. They're going to want to continue to do business with you. And that's really where they're going to succeed.
Yeah. No. What are some of the tips? What are the things that make for a good customer relationship? Because as you said right there, I think in the data from Amazon having losses shows that it's twofold. It's one, for a lot of consumers, just liking to go see something, whatever it is you're purchasing, whatever it is the transaction might be, to interact physically with the business that you're doing business with seems to make a lot of sense. But it's that second thing that becomes the more valuable component here, that loyalty that Amazon does not breed, that places online don't breed from customers per se. How do you create that loyalty? How do you create that good relationship?
It's it's ongoing, consistent efforts in a couple of areas that the Better Business Bureau recommends that you pay attention to. One is keeping in touch with your customer. So a lot of businesses do that with, newsletters and things like that, but you can also do that through social media. But speaking of social media, one great way to build trust, which is essentially what all of this is about, building trust with your current customer and future customer, is respond to customer reviews. This seems so simple, but a lot of businesses don't. I mean, even if it's good reviews that they get, they don't always respond to say, thanks for your business. We appreciate you. We're glad that you liked the service or the thing we gave you. Responding to customer reviews is actually a great way to demonstrate that you appreciate your business from your customer. And it shows that that you're interacting, that you're paying attention, you're valuing, you're continuing to foster those relationships going forward. Another thing that seems very simple, but we get a lot of calls at the Better Business Bureau about this, call them back. Call them back. I mean, we've had so many customers call us and say, hey, I have been trying to get this job done. I want to do this project, and I can't get anybody to call me back. I mean, and honestly, Craig, the reason for that is so many businesses are closing. They are pulling back on what they're offering because they can't find people to work. And so they can't take on any more jobs. So they're not taking the calls. But you've got to make it a priority if you're going to push through this and really build that relationship with your customer. That value of your business is relying on you to do things like call them back. Keep your promise. If you say that you're going to do something, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. Even if it's, go ahead.
Well, I think what's so important about something that you're saying there is even if you're a company that is right now going through some things that a lot of companies are going through and you're not sure or fairly certain that you can't do whatever the customer is asking you to do in the time frame they're looking for it to be done in, still giving that phone call back and having that conversation seems to be a valuable component, one that the big giant corporations where people go shop online won't be doing, that would help build a lot of that maybe relationship stuff that down the line, say the customer does need to go somewhere else to get something, but down the line, they'll probably think of you again because it's also rare. What you're describing is something that, as you said, a lot of businesses don't do. So it does stand out more to the consumer right now than maybe businesses realize to try to take that proactive step, especially when so many things are out of their hands in the way things are happening with politics and with everything else in our society.
Yeah, and honestly, the business might be surprised by what the customer says. I mean, if you call them, one, it shows that you're communicative, which, like we just talked about, is rare. But they might be willing to wait a year to do the project because just like, you know, so many businesses are slammed right now. And honestly, depending on what it is, I'd kind of question, why is this guy available all of a sudden when everybody else is busy?
Sure.
So, you know, some questions there, but they might be willing to wait. They want to do business with trustworthy companies. They want to do business with someone who's going to respond, appreciate their business. And if something comes up, if the wrong product is ordered or it's defective in some way, they want to know that this business is going to take care of it. And that is really where, honestly, a company can shine. When something goes wrong, how you handle it can actually build that relationship. It can show the customer, we're going to own this and we're going to make it better. We're going to take care of it right away, do our best. And consumers are fine with that. They're fine with that. That's what they want, is to know that you're going to respond to them and just take care of it. That's all.
Exactly. It's so interesting now as we talk about all the different challenges we face that those kind of like tried and true, those old school or whatever you want to call them, just the basic moves might be ways to help any small business owner anywhere in the country really find that extra step. One of the things you also said a second ago was to keep your word, to keep your promises. In a society we live in now, where so many things, and certainly again, we talk a lot of politics on the show. If you look into the world of politics, finding people to tell the truth is difficult. So I think that does breed a lot of loyalty, a lot of maybe support, maybe even you become a passionate supporter of a company. That's one of the things that the Better Business Bureau, I know, prides itself a lot in really talking about. But what is the importance of being honest as a company in the society we live in now?
It's so easy to lose trust. And when you've lost it, you will never get it back. So you can't, as a business, you can't afford not to keep your promises. If you're really thinking long-term and, you know, next gen type thinking of how you're going to grow your business and sustain, that has got to be at the forefront of how you do everything. Is we do what we're going to say we're going to do every time.
Right.
And we're going to communicate. If there's something that comes up, a delay, you know, especially last year, there was a lot of delays in getting products in, you know, and, again, consumers are fine with that as long as you're communicating. Hey, you know what? Here's an email I just got from the manufacturer. Says that this is going to be back ordered. The key is having that kind of CYAP to help you out, because as soon as customers will call the manufacturer, do not mistake them. They will do that. Mm-hmm. They will go around you and check your story. If you say something's been back ordered, they're going to call and find out, has it ever been ordered? And what is it really on back order? Don't mess with them. You know, it's like, just tell the truth. And if you can substantiate it with something like that, that's even better, because they're going to be like, okay, totally. They're just as frustrated as I am. And here's proof that they're being honest and upfront with me. And that will build trust in the long run. Like you've never seen it before.
I love the simple of advice of just tell the truth, because again, as I said, I think a lot of people are not okay. They don't accept some of the mismanagement moves in the world of the politicians who could be helping to fix some of these problems. But for the businesses, like you live in the world that we're in right now, you find out how to navigate it. You find out how to still retain customers, how to still grow your business, do all the things you need to do. And one of those things that definitely doesn't add any blame onto your shoulders, as you said, seems to be being someone who proactively communicates and tells the truth. A couple last things that I saw mentioned in an article all about this from the Better Business Bureau is to keep thanking and to keep collecting feedback. Those seem important, too, in getting to know just what the opinion is out there in the world on any sort of a business, big or small, and then to make sure that every customer that has had a positive experience with you, that you demonstrate to them how happy you were, how, you know, grateful you were for them to work with you, right?
Yeah, and that will spread the word of your company. And customer reviews are a fantastic way to do both of those things. Collect that feedback, and then in turn, like I mentioned, respond to that and thank them for their review and for their business. And if you know, maybe even go back to a handwritten thank you card, you know, like old school ways of just showing appreciation.
Oh, man, yes.
Are a great way to just build that relationship.
Yeah. So there are things you can do, essentially. The reason to have you on, thank you so much, Jessica, for joining us and chatting about this. There are things you can do as a business right now to try to keep growing, to try to keep afloat or keep surviving through all the different chaoses that we've dealt with. Before I let you go, is there anything else out there with the BBB that we should know about?
You know, in terms of customer reviews, we do have a tool for businesses out there that really makes it a great way to get those real customer reviews from real people, and they're verified by the BBB, so other people trust what they see in terms of reviews. So if you're interested in something like that, reach out to your BBB and see what we can do for you.
Cool. Perfect. I look forward to talking to you again soon. A quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in on the Chad Benson Show.
Rough Greens, ruffgreens.com/Chad. Go there, get a free bag of Rough Greens. And after you're here for my sweet retirement plan, it won't even matter. You can buy them for the whole world. Now, what is Rough Greens? Well, it's the best supplement in the world for your dog. Vitamins, minerals, probiotics, omega-3, 6, 9. Sprinkle it on top of your dog's food. What do you have? You have a supplement that will give your dog energy, a supplement that will help your dog with his skin, digestive tract, and aches and pains, joints, things of that nature, and it is incredible. They don't want you to change anything else with Rough Greens. What they want you to do is see what Rough Greens can do for your dog. It is truly amazing. It's helped my dogs tremendously, and it will help yours. Right now, get a free bag of Rough Greens. Cover the cost of shipping. That's all they ask. RUFFGreens.com/Chad. RUFFGreens.com/Chad. Free bag. Cover the cost of shipping. RUFFGreens.com/Chad. Chad Benson Show.
irreverent? Like, yeah. So what? It's the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show. My name is Greg Collins filling in. One last super quick political thing that I think is interesting. A New York Times reporter, Tom Friedman, was popping up. I think this is on CNBC and was having a conversation about Taiwan and how Nancy Pelosi is planning to go on over there. I thought it was an interesting back and forth. He was giving examples. He wasn't calling Nancy Pelosi grandma, but they were talking about his grandma, the ideal grandma, and her opinion on some stuff. Old school ways of thinking. And it just kind of dovetailed into a question about Pelosi, and I did enjoy it.
And Graham always said, countries that forget their geography, they can get in a lot of trouble.
So what do you tell Nancy Pelosi then? A lot of folks, apparently, according to the New York Times, our paper, saying that inside the White House, they're very concerned about her going over there.
Just stay home. This whole trip is completely out of context.
Don't go.
Eyes on the prize. The prize is Ukraine defeating Russia. China's helping us do that right now. Don't poke them, especially at a time when Xi Jinping about to try to secure a third term in power.
Yeah, I think that that'll probably be something he can do. Whether or not it's honest doesn't matter. But I thought that was interesting, that essentially the New York Times is begging Nancy Pelosi to stay home and not travel. And I think for a very different reason, maybe a lot of others would say, yeah, stay home, don't travel, don't go have conversations, because it seems more often than not, the people in power right now, certainly the president and his administration, but even those like Pelosi, are misstepping at times that are important. So for the sake of everybody, for the sake of all involved, let's not misstep. Let's just not step at all. Seems to be pretty good advice, although I wish. And I've said this several times about the president and his call with Xi Jinping. I wish that we had more powerful, more believable people in positions that matter, because then we wouldn't have to add the version of, hey, just don't go try to make things worse. You would be able to effectively use the intimidation, all the different things, the significance, I guess I could say, that is our country, in order to actually affect the change you want. I don't have any faith that Pelosi can do that. Before we take a break, before we're out of here, I do want to say that I thought the big story of the Mega Millions conversation was uniquely interesting, as it always gets uniquely interesting, because of how many articles popped up telling you what you do if you win. It was all over the place. If you Google it right now, like, what do I do if I win $1 billion? Every local, national, any news organization has the tips and tricks to keeping you safe and keeping the money in your pocket. A lot of people also point to the fact that most who win tons and tons of money wind up squandering it, losing it over the years, doing things like giving way too much of it away to friends and family, things it says not to do. But the basic tips, not that I think many of us really need all these, but darn it, why not? Let's do it, because it's so viral and out there. When it gets to be $1 billion, I even play. I have a couple Mega Millions tickets for later tonight. Keep the ticket safe is step number one. If you do win, sign the back of it and put it somewhere very safe, a lockbox of some kind. I don't know why that just made me think of a former SNL skit, but do whatever you can to storage it in a place that you think no one can find it, to store it somewhere. Then also make copies of it, but the original has got to be essentially just buried under your home. Protect your privacy is step two. Maybe set up some things, a P.O. box. I love that this advice, again, is advice I'm giving. Like, a lot of people are winning this thing. One human being, two, three, maybe, are going to win eventually. Maybe not even this drawing. But darn it, let's behave like we can all win it. Get professional advice, it says, too. Hire the experts. Get all kinds of people involved. And then finally, don't make any big decisions is the last news tip. I think Fox News had that one out there. You'll be tempted to make a big purchase, but give it a little bit of time. I disagree with that last one. And I only mean for one big purchase. If you do win $1 billion this evening and happen to listen to the show, you need to tweet us. You need to text us. You need to tell us you won. We won't pester you. We promise. But if somehow somebody who heard this is like, wait a minute, I won $1 billion. I definitely need to hear from you. But I would say you should go rogue with one thing. Like, buy one crazy, inappropriate, should not have purchased it thing. Do something that helps no one but yourself, and then call it a day. I was even talking to producer Phil during a break about this. This is advice that he's heard, too. Just get it out of your system. Don't buy every single thing on the docket. Don't buy the island and the private jet. but do just do something nuts. And if you need an example, and I hate that I'm giving this example out, but darn it, it's fun enough for me. I would get as many of the items as possible, and I know they're very expensive. I've seen all the movies, so I'm going to assume they are, to recreate most of the Batmobile and or a Batman suit so I could live a day in the life of Batman. And that might sound childish and juvenile to people or dangerous to others. I would fight no crime. I would do nothing good with that power, with that ability. I would just have it, and it would just be sitting there, and I'd be the eccentric billionaire that has a Batcave if he ever needs it, because people have made working utility belts and other things, and I don't know why I know this. You can accuse me of being a nerd. It's okay, but that's the purchase I'd make that helps no one but me, and then maybe sell it later. Who knows? But all right, Craig Collins filling in. This is the Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show.